Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Candidates Forum for the 2nd District. I'm Jacqueline Frederick, and I'm president of the Latino Outreach Council. The League of Women Voters and Latino Outreach Council are very proud to be able to do this service for the county and for this community. We hope that you appreciate it. There's a lot of effort and volunteer time, as you can see from the folks here, and a lot behind the scenes to put this together. We also want to thank AGP Video. They are filming tonight, so this will be televised on slow span and a repeated loop until the election. Additionally, it's being live streamed tonight, so if some of you have friends or family or colleagues that couldn't make it, you can text them to go to slow span, and there will be a link there where they can actually watch it live. I want to tell you a little bit about Latino Outreach Council. We are a nonprofit group, we are nonpartisan, and we are nonpolitical. The mission of our organization is outreach to the Hispanic community in order to encourage all members of our community to participate in civic affairs and also to be aware of the resources that are available to them. This arose out of a study that was done back in 1994, and the results of that study still hold true today, maybe even more so today, that many people in the Hispanic community, particularly the immigrant community, stay in the shadows, and they don't participate as fully as they're entitled to. So that is the purpose of our organization. And we hope by holding forums such as these and also educational forums throughout the year, as well as some fantastic cultural events such as Fiesta Latina, Fiestas Patrias, Day of the Dead, and coming up on Cinco de Mayo, we are partnering with United Way, and we're helping them co-host Flavors of Slow. It's a wonderful fundraiser. All the proceeds will benefit United Way. And Latino Outreach Council has helped by putting the entertainment together. So there's going to be folklorico dancers, mariachis, Greek dancers, tango dancers, lots of great food, and lots of beverages donated by wonderful restaurants. You can go to United Way's website for more information and to buy tickets for that. The League of Women Voters is dedicated. It's an organization that's been around for decades, dedicated to civil discourse and the opportunity for voters to become informed voters. The mission is to provide every candidate with an opportunity for a fair, unbiased, and balanced forums and an opportunity to explain to you, the voters, what they're all about, their viewpoints, so that you can be an informed voter. An informed voter is a good voter. So we really are happy that all three of the candidates for 2nd District agreed to be at this forum. And I'd like to introduce at this time Vera Wallen with the League of Women Voters. She will be our timer this evening. There are a couple of women up front here, and they are the sorters. These women are trained by the League of Women Voters on how to sort your questions. You all had the opportunity to fill out a 3x5 card. And throughout this, you may continue to fill out 3x5 cards as you think of questions that you might want to ask. And there are ladies holding their hands up in the back, and there are the runners. So they have been trained to run over and pick up your card and bring them to the sorters. So that's what we expect you to do, because this forum is an opportunity for you to ask your questions, okay? We have incredible volunteers today. These are three very well-known people in the community who have agreed to volunteer to be readers. And I want to emphasize, they are readers only. These are not their questions. These are your questions. They are here simply to read the questions to the candidates. They will each have a turn to read a question or more, obviously, and each candidate is going to answer each question for 1 minute with no rebuttal. I'd like to introduce our esteemed volunteers. Gail Stoneberg, raise your hand. I've known Gail for a number of years. She is an extremely active member of the San Luis Obispo County community and volunteers with quite a number of nonprofits. And we thank you, Gail, for being here today. Hal Abrams, in the middle, is founder and president of Estero Bay Community Radio. And Angelica Fortini is the librarian for the city of Paso Robles. So we thank you very much for your time today. Each of the candidates will give us a three-minute opening statement, and they will each close with a three-minute closing statement. I am selecting the order in which they go just randomly, and I'm going to start in order, and I'll ask Mr. Gibson to start with his three-minute opening statement.
Thank you, Jackie, and thanks to the Latino Outreach Council and the League of Women Voters for putting this on. This is fundamental American civics, and I'm proud and pleased to be part of it. I have been your 2nd District County Supervisor since 2007, and in that time, I have been proud to lead remarkable teams that have accomplished a tremendous amount. You know, you look back in over those 11 and a half years, working with dedicated and committed and engaged members of communities, we have finished the Los Osos wastewater project. The sewer is complete and it's 96% connected. We have rebuilt the Cayucas Pier. In District 2, we have new library branches in 3 of the 4 branch libraries, and we're going to be working on the 4th one here in Los Osos pretty soon. You know, at a wider level, we've taken on some of the most challenging times that the county has ever experienced, the Great Recession that hit us starting in late 2008 and on through 2009, prompted our board, a very diverse board, to come together and work on things like pension reform. We did that a couple of years before the state took it on. We have revamped the way that we deal with employee compensation and are at this point saving $25 million a year or more in salary and benefit costs over where we would have been. The net result is that the county treasury is strong, our pension outlook is good, we are not facing the kind of crises that a lot of cities in particular are having to struggle with. That allows us, that financial strength allows us to take on new challenges in terms of dealing with a lot of services that we have yet to fully implement. We are faced with water management. That's going to be a significant issue in virtually every community in this county. And through the state legislation on sustainable groundwater management, we have engaged in 6 different basins and work with many other municipalities and jurisdictions. We're going to work on affordable housing. We have, to date, not accomplished near what we should for a variety of reasons we might get into this evening. And we have to work on mental health care. And we're not just talking about mental health care within our county jail. We have a mental health crisis in this country, in this state, in this county, and county government as the frontline provider of services has a fundamental responsibility to up its game on that. So I come before you with a track record that I'm proud of, with a lot of excitement for taking on the challenges that run ahead of us, and I'm pleased to be here to talk about the issues and ask for your vote. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson. Mr. Sparks.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm glad that you're all here. Thank you for coming.
Thanks. I'm Patrick Sparks. I've been practicing law here for 22 years, and one of the areas where I've been practicing law is at the mental institution here in Atascadero State Hospital. So that's an issue that resonates with me as to why the Latino Outreach Program exists, and I respect the work that they're doing. I know that from my experience, when that shifted the burden from the state to the counties, that there were a lot of problems that were going to happen. And so the things that are happening are just part of how that new system had to be made. So in part, the things that are happening, that the reason why I'm running is because I've seen over expenditures in government I appreciate that Mr. Gibson mentioned Los Osos. I litigated against the project where they spent an extra $100 million that they didn't need to spend. So that same thing is happening here in Morro Bay. While it's not a county issue, it's certainly something that's drawn me into this race where I just can't take it. The idea that things are okay is haunting to me, actually. It's something that I don't believe it's okay. We can talk about balanced budgets, but in the end, there are many people that are being disenfranchised, and they're just not making it. So we're seeing more and more homelessness. We're seeing more and more people who could be functioning, but they're just not functioning. In our community here, we have an elder population. It's becoming more and more significant as to what it is and where they're going to go. And we have pressures from a lot of people that would like to live in this fine county. So there's always going to be some inherent tension with the budget in relationship to how growth is going to occur. And I believe that I'm educationally positioned to be able to assist in that matter, having degrees not only in law but also in urban studies and planning as a political science master's degree student and a degree in economics. So I'm here to actually talk about those things, as well as having some studies at Cal Poly, which brought me here, in civil and environmental engineering. So I appreciate that everybody did come out tonight. I'm looking forward to fielding some of your questions, and I'm glad that both my colleagues made it out tonight as well.
Thank you, Mr. Sparks. Mr. Eccles.
Good evening. Thank you to the Latino Outreach Council and the League of Women Voters, as well as our local chambers, for hosting this event. And thank you to those in the audience and those watching on the televisions or the computer for participating in this event. This is a true expression of democracy. And it is so important, particularly at the juncture that we find ourselves in today, to participate in our democracy. My name is Jeff Eccles. I'm a resident of Morro Bay, a small business owner, a father of two 14-year-olds here. They're twins, a boy and a girl. And I'm running for county supervisor because I honestly believe we can do better. We can do better as a community. We can do better as a county in delivering the government that the county provides. The incumbent has had 12 years, and he's asking for 16 years. And I believe that the policy approaches that we've been taking have been failing in many, many ways. One is affordability. As I walk throughout the 2nd District and talk with friends and neighbors, I'm taken aback by particularly the seniors that I speak with that don't know if they're going to be able to stay in their homes because of skyrocketing utility costs. And they virtually have nowhere else to go if they lose their home because they can no longer afford to stay there. Homelessness has become a dire issue in the county. 10 years ago, the county started on a 10-year plan to end homelessness. And it hasn't worked. This is something that we need to find some disruptive policies to solve, because what we're doing now, folks, is not working. Mental health services, both inside our jail and outside our jail, are not working. We have 16 beds, 16 psychiatric beds for a population of 280,000 people. Those are problems in the making because of current policy. Lastly, with regard to the pension, we have the largest unfunded pension liability in the county's history right now. So these things need to be addressed. What I offer is new leadership and fresh ideas. As I mentioned to you, I'm a small business owner. I would want to bring a perspective of pragmatism and common sense to the board of directors. Protecting our environment is critical. When I look at the faces of my two 14-year-olds, I know that it is our obligation as a community, particularly living in such a special place, to preserve our natural resources for the next generations. Lastly, we need to focus on efficient and responsive government. As a small businessman, as an entrepreneur, and someone who thinks pragmatically with common sense, I would be able to bring those values to the Board of Supervisors. So I respectfully ask for your consideration and your vote come June 5th. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Eccles. I want to say a special thank you to our supporters and co-sponsors tonight, the Morro Bay Chamber, Los Osos Baywood Park Chamber, and the Cambria Chamber, and thank them for helping to organize this event tonight. We really appreciate the collaboration. We're going to start with our first question, Gail, I'll have you pose your first question, which will go to Mr. Gibson.
How do you feel about Morro Bay building its sewer plant outside city boundaries?
Well, the matter of the Morro Bay sewer is under the authority and the responsibility of the Morro Bay City Council. And I am working closely with other jurisdictions on similar infrastructure projects, but it is not my place to step in and comment or dictate on how the city is pursuing its preferred solution to the sewer issue. That they are proposing a site outside city limits is really a technicality, because by state law, should they acquire that property, they will be able to annex it into the city and take over the land use authority on that site. So really the role of a county supervisor is to cooperate and not to dictate to cities. And I've offered the city the expertise of county staff in working through the many environmental issues that are going to be at play if indeed a sewer plant is built outside city limits. But in the end, it's going to be the city's responsibility and the city's authority to decide what they want to do.
Mr. Sparks.
I think it's outrageous that the city is moving the sewer treatment plant. I'll just start with that. The extra cost of $167 million is basically a $28,000 per home cost, and it's unnecessary. They can rebuild that plant as many times as they need to. I've already instructed them on my letterhead to that effect. They've not paid attention to it. So that's one of the reasons that, you know, I'm running, is because I get the kind of political response from the incumbent on that subject, where it's the same problem over and over again. Government continues to expand, but at the cost of what? I'd certainly like to hear more on that question, since we are 1 minute. So I hope someone else from Morro Bay has a similar kind of bent so I could talk more about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Eccles.
So the question really asks about regional infrastructure, and I believe the role of the county supervisor should be to provide leadership and be a collaborative agent amongst the various areas within the 2nd District so that they can work together. I'll tell you, it has been a shame that we have had millions upon millions of dollars of cost overruns in our infrastructure projects along the North Coast. Part of the reason that we've had those cost overruns is because each project has been looked at from a very monolithic approach. There hasn't been regional collaboration. And if not the county supervisor to provide that, then whom? So I would approach our infrastructure challenges in a more regionally based approach.
Thank you. Hal, if you could present your question, Mr. Sparks will answer it first.
Within 60 days of your election, what specifically will you do to enforce the weekly rental ordinance in Cayucas and Cambria?
The weekly, I'm sorry, could you repeat that last part?
What will you do to enforce the weekly rental ordinance in Cayucas and Cambria?
Well, I'm not as familiar with the weekly rental ordinance, so I'll pass on that for the time being, listening to my other persons speak, the other persons here.
I'll come back to you. Mr. Eccles.
So enforcement, of course, is via the county and the permitting process through planning and building. I believe what we need to do is listen extremely closely to the constituents that are in those individual areas. So obviously Cambria has its own vacation rental ordinance, as does Cayucas, as does Los Osos. And that's a good thing, because those individual communities can tailor their ordinance to that particular community. I know that Cayucas ordinance, for instance, allows for closer density of the vacation rental ordinances. So I wouldn't want to just arbitrarily enforce without being in very close touch with the constituents in Cambria or Cayucas, whatever the particular area is. But the actual enforcement is up to the county.
Mr. Gibson.
The weekly rental ordinance, I think we're actually talking about short-term rentals or rentals less than 30 days. And it is a county ordinance, and it's not a matter of community-by-community enforcement. It is the law of the county, and the county does enforce the short-term rental ordinance. What we find is that there are occasionally nuisance complaints, and we have a code enforcement team that is now working on the weekends and into the evenings so that they're going to be on site to address these. But in general, the issue is not so much the nuisance complaints, but the fact that there are so many of them and the effect that, the short-term rentals, the vacation rentals have had on housing affordability is profound. The problem we have, the real problem we have with short-term rentals is that the board majority that we're dealing with right now is prone to granting exceptions to the ordinance to allow more and more and more of these rentals to show up in communities. That does two things. It affects neighborhood character and it affects housing affordability. So my very strong effort is going to be to get a handle on the number of vacation rentals and see what we can do to mitigate their effects on the long-term rental market, which is a real issue in affordability.
Okay. Mr. Sparks.
Thank you.
Are we going around again?
No, he did not answer that question, so I've told him I would get back to him.
So we have that option if we don't like the question?
Okay. It's not if you don't like the question. If you're unfamiliar with the answer, if you cannot answer it and you want to defer, I do allow that.
Okay.
So,
thank you for getting back to me on that. You know, as most people that live here on the Central Coast know, the time that the pressure is on is during the summertime when the volume of people come from all over the world here. As someone who's been serving them unconditionally at Morro Rock through surf and barbecue ministry over the last 3 years, I've seen the influx of people physically all the time, and they come from Fresno and Bakersfield and other places where it's hot. But in the meantime, you know, so that puts a strain on any and all of the housing that's around here during that period of high peak and high density. So, you know, obviously there's a need to try and help them however we can during the period of time where that's a huge influx of people, because during the off season there's not that many people here. And so while people want to be here, it's still high cost. So there's a different problem in relationship to the housing need. Thank you for getting back to me on that.
You're welcome. Angelica, your question, Mr. Eccles will answer this one first.
How long have you lived in the county, and what offices have you held?
So I've been in the county now almost 14 years, 13 years, a little over 13 years. I grew up in Southern California down in Long Beach and used to come up here as a child and have family here as well. So this is my home. In terms of offices held, I've held appointed offices right here in Morro Bay. I was the chairman of the Harbor Advisory Board, and then I've sat on many, many other civic boards outside of the county as well up in Santa Cruz County. Years ago, I served on a water board with over 30,000 connections as well. So I've had lots of civic involvement over the last 12 years that have prepared me very well for this position. And I'll make the point, too, in saying that we do need fresh ideas. We need some new leadership right now, because what we're experiencing is the status quo, and the status quo is no longer working.
Mr. Gibson.
Thank you. You know, I'm going to leave it to you all, the voters, to decide whether I've been around too long, whether you buy that argument or not. But in terms of elected office, this is the only elected office I've held. Prior to that, I served 15 months on the County Planning Commission, appointed by my predecessor. Prior to that, I served on the boards of the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County and the mighty little Cayucas Land Conservancy, which has done some tremendous work. And prior to that, I was a member for 9 years of the Cayucas Citizens Advisory Council, and I'm very proud that that's where I started in public issues 24 years ago. You know, in this time, I've been around long enough to really understand how county government works and how we can apply county government to get things done. I've also been around long enough that I've been able to develop a tremendous set of relationships, primarily with community members who are key to getting things done, but also to state and federal elected officials and state and federal agency staff. And it's that accumulation of experience and those relationships that I hold very dear that allows me to work on the vexing problems that we face as we go forward.
Thank you. Gail, your next question will start with Mr. Gibson.
I believe I didn't get to
speak on that. Oh, I'm so sorry. I checked you off. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I apologize, Mr. Sparks.
Well, I'll keep it brief because I don't have the background that they have in relationship to working in the various parts of the bureaucracy. I'm actually an outsider to the bureaucracy, unless you count a law practice as part of it, where every day I'm involved in bureaucracy. There's certainly not a limit to the amount of rules and regulations that I have to study. And somebody who's worked in administrative law for about 30 to 40% of my practice, one of the things that I do is I have to go into institutions, like besides the Tascadero State Hospital, a lot of the state prisons as well. So I'm familiar with how to get along with people who have to every day show up and count to how long they're going to be in office or how long they're going to be in the system as they continue to work towards their merited retirements. Thank you.
Okay, now, Gail, your question for Mr. Gibson.
Slo County is feeling the effects of climate change. Sea level rise, increased wildfires, decreasing water supplies. What should Slo County do to counter these effects? And would you consider endorsing national legislation that acts to reduce CO2 emissions?
So the county has what we call our Energy Wise Plan, but it's actually our Climate Action Plan, and that's a comprehensive piece of our general plan that takes on a lot of issues of climate change. We have plans to limit CO2 emissions per state legislation, AB 32, and we're well on our way to accomplishing that. What we really have to work on, and what we have been working on, is changing the way we frame development going forward so that we deal with compact development that limits the amount of CO2, both by the amount of vehicle travel that we have, and also by the energy consumption within the buildings that we're building. So over the last probably eight years, we have worked really hard on controlling carbon emissions, and we're well on our target to reach the reductions of CO2 emissions as the target dates approach for AB 32. The board did fail. The board majority decided not to take up a really good option on that, which was community choice energy, and I'd love to have a question come forth on that because that could have been a real winner for this county.
Thank you. Mr. Sparks.
Some of the issues with regards to climate change, I think, are red herring issues. That's sort of the beginning take on the subject for me. And, of course, the biggest sink for carbon is the ocean. So keeping it healthy is a big component of making sure that the carbon sink continues to work. So in that regards, things like over nitrates into the ocean or over carbons in the ocean. If you've lived here in Morro Bay, you've seen those sailfish, jellyfish type things that come up. And it's because there's too much algae in the water that then induce the growth of them. So one of the things that I think about in relationship to infrastructure planning is something that I call ocean algae farming on land, increasing the footprint of the ocean. I took that to Washington, D.C. to talk to Lois Capps while she was still a congresswoman. And I hope at some point to, because of the wealth that Morro Bay has of both having being on the grid and having a grid location, as well as the opportunity to build from their sewer treatment plant something valuable, that would be something that I would hope we could look at.
Mr. Eccles.
So the county is required to have a plan with regard to climate change via the Climate Action Plan. What we can do, however, locally, at the local level, on a daily basis that makes a difference is determine how we utilize our resources as we grow. It's a fact that within the general plan, we still have growth. What we need to avoid at all costs is a continuation of the current policies that have resulted in urban sprawl. All you have to do is go up the grade or go down toward Pismo and sit in traffic for 5 minutes to realize that urban sprawl is not good. We've got policy that's resulting in urban sprawl that's not good policy, and that worsens the effects of the greenhouse gas emissions from the cars sitting there. More fuel is burned, not to mention the lifestyle consequences. So we need to make sure that as we grow in the most environmentally efficient ways to conserve the resources that we are blessed with.
Hal, your question to Mr. Sparks.
Do you support oil drilling on the Carrizo Plain?
Well, I haven't really thought much about oil drilling on the Carrizo Plain, but now that I'm thinking about it, I appreciate the question. The idea of oil drilling in general is that we should be utilizing our resources in a wise steward way. And so if it's available in a wise stewardship way, then I'm all for that. It's certainly a valuable resource until we can replace oil with something else. I think that it's still, in terms of the cost-benefit analysis, a reasonable thing to consider. Thank you.
Mr. Eccles.
So with regard to oil drilling, of course, there's a big line between offshore drilling and onshore drilling. I am adamantly opposed to any form of offshore drilling or exploration. We live in one of the most magnificent places in the world, and to put that at risk is unnecessary, in my view. In terms of onshore drilling, there are leases in place right now. As far as expansion, frankly, I wouldn't want to see a huge expansion of onshore drilling as well. I think that as a society, as a community, we need to move away from petroleum-based fuel products and evolve into sustainable energy sources. So I wouldn't want to see the county proliferate. Maybe here's the crux of that question. I don't want to see the county proliferate with a bunch of oil wells inland just because we can't do them offshore.
Mr. Gibson.
Thank you. I'm glad that question came forward because news just came down today that the Bureau of Land Management, under the Trump administration's I'm going to save the adjective. Under the Trump administration's direction, has authorized the reactivation of a well on not just on the Carrizo Plain, but within the Carrizo National Monument, and I am fundamentally opposed to it. I was asked by a KCBX radio reporter contacted me this afternoon for my comment on that. And what I told her was that this is a direct insult to this county. The Carrizo Plain is one of the remarkable natural features. It is a place that hosts incredibly special species, the San Joaquin kit fox. It is home to quite a number of condors. And for the Trump administration to propose to reactivate a well that has been idle since the 1950s and was scheduled for restoration is an absolute outrage.
Angelica, your question for Mr. Eccles.
What is your opinion about the recent student uprising, and what do you feel about the racial mix of Cal Poly students?
So I'm going to presume that the question is talking about the student uprising relative to racial issues, which is probably appropriate since we're being hosted by the Latino Outreach Council. I can tell you this. My grandfather was born in Aguascalientes, Mexico. My mother was a first-generation citizen here of the United States. Actually, my grandfather became a citizen of the United States, but she was first born here, so I'm second generation. Inclusivity is extremely important to me. I was able to work my way through Long Beach State by pushing shopping carts. Everyone should have that type of opportunity to do that. So we can't judge people based on their skin color. We need to ensure as a community that we are inclusive, that people are judged on their merits, not on what they look like or their last name. So particularly as a grandson of an immigrant, I would pledge to always uphold the values of inclusivity.
Mr. Gibson.
Thank you. You know, front page of the paper today, Cal Poly is the least racially diverse campus in the CSU and the UC system, and they have a long way to go. Furthermore, there are members of that student body who have absolutely the most despicable, disgusting views on the nature of humankind with their racist remarks, the racist graffiti, the racist vandalism. Cal Poly has a long way to go, and they haven't made much progress recently. When you talk about student uprising, I'm not quite sure what the question is aimed at, but let me tell you what's inspired me, and that has been the high school students who have come forward in the aftermath of the Parkland school shooting. I was at the March for Our Lives in Mitchell Park, and I was absolutely blown away by the eloquence and the passion of seniors and juniors and sophomores who attend school in this county. And it gives me tremendous hope for the future to see how energized they are, see how committed they are to doing the right thing, to end gun violence. Our future is bright when those kids become full-fledged voting adults and elected officials, we're going to be in a better place.
Mr. Sparks.
We all bleed the same. That's the first part of the race question, as far as I'm concerned. So there isn't a race issue on my part, or should there be one at Cal Poly? I think the kids that were trying to make a statement in fun, it boomeranged on them, and it was a terrible injustice towards the idea that we're any different. We are all created in the image of the living God, in my opinion, and in that regards, we should all respect one another, regardless of race. So, you know, one of the ways to get more sensitive to that might be to actually involve yourself with the communities where those types of gang activities are coming up. Like, for instance, one of the fears that I've heard from people that I work with in the institutions is that gangs would come into San Luis Obispo County. And that is a big concern for those who see that activity on a regular basis. So for people like the students at Cal Poly, perhaps they need to go to a place in a safe way to go see what that looks like.
Gail, your question will go to Mr. Gibson.
What is your vision for effective mental health services?
Well, the first thing we need to do is look at what services we provide. And contrary to what a previous speaker has asserted, we have a lot of mental health services we offer. Problem is they're constrained, and we have gaps in our system. What my vision is that anyone with mental health issues is going to have access to care that will cure them. And beyond that, those with mental health issues should have attention provided by appropriate experts that keeps them from getting into the criminal justice system. One of the hopeful things I'm seeing, and again, it comes out of the school shooting and the response to school violence, is our school. I'm working with our school districts on an initiative we call Building Community. And the key there is that we need to change the culture of indifference toward mental illness. We need to remove the stigma toward mental illness. We need to be a community, all of us, those with and those without mental illness. We need to come together and provide support for those individuals so that we don't end up with the horrific outcomes that we've had to suffer over recent years.
Mr. Sparks.
Well, as a continuing legal education issue, there was a diagnosis of perhaps 20% of the population has some form of mental illness, and perhaps even as high as 33%. So one of the things that I've learned at Atascadero State Hospital after interviewing thousands of psychologists and psychiatrists is that there's a behavioral component, and for some, there's a chemical imbalance. And so what happens is a lot of times people will start to treat their chemical imbalances with other things, exacerbating their mental illness condition, where the first thing would be to try and remove those substances from them and replacing them with appropriate psychotropic medications for those that have chemical imbalance issues. The other component, though, is behavioral. So, you know, making sure that people can get into some kind of therapy to be able to recover and be able to become stable from their mental health issues would be a big deal, or in remission would be the term. Thanks.
Mr. Eccles.
So we need to address the issue of mental illness with the urgency that it deserves, because terrible things can happen in our community when we don't. Being a small business person, one of the things that I look at are best practices. We are one of 58 different counties. And my guess is that many out of those other 57 counties are doing a better job than we are at delivering mental health services. So we go out and look at what they're doing with a sense of urgency and bring those best practices back to us here in our county. I've done some volunteer work that involves this area, and I can tell you that it seems almost insurmountable at just the county level. So we have some public-private partnerships in place already. I think those need to be enhanced as well. I think we need to reach out to the compassion that we all have within this county, that every citizen has. We are a kind, caring, and compassionate people here on the Central Coast. And we need to reach out to more volunteers to participate in the process, because government alone won't solve it.
Hal, your question goes to Mr. Sparks first.
What is the county not doing that they should be doing to prepare for the closure of Diablo Canyon?
Well, one of the things that they could do, since it's a private sector issue, I thought that it maybe shouldn't close at all. It's certainly not a risk, as it's stable. I've interviewed some of my friends who have worked there. And so one of the things would be to ask PG&E to reconsider keeping it open. In fact, why would you close a perfectly functioning nuclear power plant? It just doesn't make any sense. So that would be one of my first things that I would actually inquire, and I'm thinking about doing it even as a candidate.
Mr. Eccles.
The county has been relying heavily upon the Economic Vitality Corporation within the county to do some studies. First off, to put together an economic plan to mitigate the effects of losing the power plant. So what we're not doing right now, what we are doing is studies, and study after study. We haven't even selected yet the consultant to do the plan, and we're a year and a half or so into that process. What we're not doing is reaching out to other companies that may want to do business here in San Luis Obispo County. To my knowledge, we haven't appointed an individual within the county, a new hire within the county, or a redirect of an existing employee. Because when you look at the cost of one employee, total cost, say $100,000 versus the millions of dollars of revenue that will be lost when Diablo closes for the county, it's worth it. There's value there. So I haven't seen the sense of urgency in the county as well on this issue, and we need to get going on it.
Mr. Gibson.
Well, Mr. Eccles hasn't seen the sense of urgency. He hasn't read the newspaper. He hasn't attended our board meetings because we are full steam ahead in dealing with mitigating this significant event. What we're not doing is for a variety of reasons that include efforts by our Home Builders Association to thwart the development of affordable housing, because what we're going to need to do is grow new businesses to take the place of Diablo Canyon when it closes, and it will close. That decision is made, and it's not worth looking back at. But let me talk about what we are doing. First and foremost, I reached out to our state senator, Senator Monning. He has authored SB 1090 in bipartisan cooperation with our assemblyman, Jordan Cunningham. That's going to, if successful, is going to provide $75 million to the county, the schools, and other jurisdictions to keep essential county services going in the transition to closure. It's also going to provide a $10 million shot in the arm to work on economic development investment. And we have already fronted, as the county, we've already fronted, I want to say, about $250,000 or $300,000 to kickstart that, and we're well on our way to having a broad plan to bolster our economy there.
Angelica, your question will start with Mr. Eccles.
What can the county do to increase affordable housing for low-income residents? What additional efforts could the county pursue to address homelessness in the county?
All in 60 seconds. So I've been on the board of directors for the Housing Trust Fund for over 3 years. I also served almost for 3 years as the executive director of the Home Builders Association. So I have seen the housing conundrum from the nonprofit side to the for-profit side. I have an idea for something called opportunity zones. Somewhat mirrors some of the state laws that are being passed right now as well. But we need to incentivize builders to build the right types of homes in the right places. The right places are close to transportation corridors and job centers. The right types of homes are smaller footprint, more energy efficient, and higher density homes. Right now, because of failed policy that's in place, home builders are not incented to do those things. I would also mention in closing that affordable does have a place. I've been responsible in part as treasurer of the Housing Trust Fund for sending millions of dollars toward affordable projects over the last 3 years. So this is an all-above-the-line challenge, and it requires all-above-the-line solutions, and I've got the breadth of experience to do that.
Mr. Gibson.
Thank you. We'll talk about those failed policies and Jeff's participation in them. Three things real quickly. We need to look at the long-term rental market, and I referenced that previously. We need to bring back an affordable long-term rental market with incentives for affordable long-term rental and some tax policy that taxes empty second homes. Second, we need a direct investment of county funds, and Supervisor Adam and Hill and I brought forward a $5 million proposal for a revolving fund last year that our board majority had no interest whatsoever. But we need to put county money into the hands of our nonprofit builders. And the third thing is we need to have an inclusionary housing ordinance. We need to have an ordinance that puts a fee on market rate housing that's built that will funnel into our affordable housing stream. And Jeff references failed policy. And in fact, he has come before our board and advocated positions that have helped our policies fail. Our affordable housing fees have been far too low for far too long, and Jeff, on behalf of the home builders, was advocating that we not raise them. He also came and advocated that we actually repeal the inclusionary housing ordinance so we would have $0. So that program's been starved for funds. We're working with the Home Builders Association and their new executive director to put forward a plan that Supervisor Peschong and I will bring to the board in August. Thank you.
Mr. Sparks.
Well, as a realtor and a broker, evaluating the problem has been one of supply and demand. The supply is inadequate for the amount of demand that's out there. And so to increase the supply of housing in a sane way is one of the things that I'm focused on. So I've looked at a company from the Netherlands where you can actually build a home with a four-man crew in 2 days with a crane. It's a kind of concrete with air in it. It's called aircrete from their perspective. So I'm looking at how Mexico has evaluated that, and they put a plant in place, and it looks to them like in our area when we think about what is actually involved in the regional, I think it's more of a regional issue than it is a county issue, meaning the contiguous counties are all impacted by the kind of infrastructure that we put in place for new housing. So it's something that I would certainly be considering how to utilize existing footprints that the county might have access to for construction of affordable housing.
Thank you. All right, Gail, your question for Mr. Gibson.
What is your position on the development of a wind farm off our coast?
Well, that's an exciting possibility. I first heard about this a couple of years ago, and I thought, man, this is a big idea, a science fiction idea. But as I learned more about it, I realized that it's a real possibility, and I've been following this very carefully. I'm actually on a federal task force. The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management has put together a task force looking at the potential for floating wind platforms 20, 30 miles off our coast. It has a lot of potential here. We have connections through the Morro Bay Power Plant and Diablo Canyon when it closes, and it makes sense to locate wind power in this part of California. We have excellent wind resources. But the other thing that's exciting is that there's an economic potential there because it's certainly in construction. They're talking about $100 million in economic activity for the construction and a significant chunk of $100 million a year in economic activity for the maintenance of these farms. So it's many years off, and it's basically a federal issue, but in terms of what happens on land here in the county, I'm all in for supporting that activity.
Mr. Sparks.
Hey, I talked to an engineer that came from Germany this year out at Morro Rock and interviewed him. He was working on a wind farm there in the North Sea, and it was fascinating to listen to him talk about it. Of course, the North Sea is a lot different than it is here. We'd have an easier time of it than they do there, that's for sure. But in relationship to the idea of a wind farm, my initial impression is always that it's about step technology in relationship to the next technology that becomes most economical. So if it proves that it's the most next step technology, as a private sector member would, rather than just a public sector member trying to evaluate what the big numbers are for reinvestment, as a private sector member, I'm against anything that would show that there would be an additional subsidy. So I would certainly be looking at it carefully to determine whether or not it was cost-effective.
Mr. Eccles.
I believe as a society, we do need to move toward renewable, sustainable forms of energy. And so an offshore wind farm may be something worth exploring. It would be, of course, initially under the federal purview, and then they would come to us for our local input as well. I am a United States Coast Guard licensed captain, and I have a history of maritime service. And we live in a, particularly this town, a fishing village. We still have an active fishing fleet here. We are the only safe harbor between Monterey and Ventura. So those are factors that would need to be taken into consideration and considered very carefully before embarking on such a plan.
Okay. Hal, your question will go to Mr. Sparks first.
Will you please address the county jail issue regarding deaths while in the sheriff's custody?
Well, I think we touched on it briefly already in the subject of the mentally ill being a part of what the county now has to deal with rather than what the state facilities dealt with before when someone came into the institutions. So I know that in this regard, the most that I know so far is that Mr. Parkinson has elected or has sought another person to come in and be the medical director, trying to rectify the problems that may have been occurring at the jail with the state transferring its burden to the county governments for taking care of people that have mental illness and have violent tendencies.
Mr. Eccles.
So, unfortunately, the jail, because of a change in the state laws and an inadequacy at the county level here to provide mental health services, has become a de facto mental health service provider. And it's shameful what happened there. There's just no way around it. We're shamed as a community. The sheriff is shamed. And the jail is shamed. There's no way around that. We have to be honest with ourselves. We can't allow that to happen as a people. We need to look at why it happened, because we weren't delivering the proper mental health services in the county, because the jail perhaps wasn't adequately prepared to deal with what was placed upon them. And then we need to move towards solutions, because it's intolerable.
Mr. Gibson.
Thank you. I watched 2.5 hours of the Andrew Holland jail video, and it was the hardest thing I've ever had to look at. I am so sorry for the ordeal that he had to endure and for the loss that his family continues to struggle with. The sheriff is ultimately accountable for that. And what the sheriff has told us is that everyone involved directly was following policies and procedures on the books. My very deep disappointment, if that maybe that's true, but my very deep disappointment is that no one in the course of those 2 days stepped back from that, stepped outside the policy and the system to see what was profoundly wrong with what was going on. And that leads me to what really needs to happen. We have rewritten the policies and procedures. That's a good thing, but they won't be effective until we change the basic culture of indifference toward mentally ill people. And that's the path that I'm working very hard on. We're going to invest a couple $1 million in jail health care in the coming budget year, but we have to work on the culture so that mentally ill inmates and mentally ill people in our society are treated fundamentally differently.
Angelica, your question for Mr. Eccles.
Several years ago, there was surplus funds in the county. The Board of Supervisors approved giving $1,000 to every county employee. If there is a surplus again, how do you want to spend that money, or how would you want that money used?
So we're going to hear some reasons, I predict, or some reasoning, I predict, in a moment here why that was the right thing to do. It was irresponsible. I'll go back to the pension issue. In 2006, which happens to be the year the incumbent was first elected, the unfunded pension liability equated to 1x the county payroll. Today, in 2018, the unfunded pension liability equates to 3x the county payroll. Again, we are at the worst condition in terms of the unfunded pension liability in the history of the county. And to take that excess money, and make a blanket distribution like that was not prudent. It may have been nice, it may have felt good, but it certainly wasn't prudent. And if elected, as a small business owner, I'm willing to make the tough decisions and not do the things that make people feel good necessarily.
Mr. Gibson.
Well, how we deal with surplus is the same strategy as how we deal with deficit, and we have been through the worst economic times of anybody's memory. We look at three basic places where a county surplus might be spent. One is in strengthening an already strong county economic or county financial situation. We have strong reserves, and we are ready to deal with difficult times. So as we look, should we ever have a surplus again, and I'm hopeful that in the next couple of years we might get back to it, that's where we would be looking. The second major category we look at is how can we expand programs. So we know we have needs in mental health. We know we have needs in water management. We always have needs in law enforcement and public safety. And then the third is in employee compensation. So in order to do all the good things the county does, we have to recruit and retain the best county employees. And we have a tremendous turnover as the baby boom retires right now. And so we're going to have to make strategic allocations of any funds we have in deficit or in surplus in order to fund each of those three initiative areas.
Mr. Sparks.
Well, I'm for smaller government, so we'll just start with that as a basis. If you have a surplus, you should be looking to do things with what the county issues are. One of them is, for instance, in Los Osos, there are a lot of unfinished roads. So why didn't they just investigate trying to finish the roads that are not built through, that are still dirt roads in Los Osos? There are things that are problematic that when you spend too much money on one thing and then you've built up a surplus because you're anticipating these new budgets that you have, then it's that we're spending too much. We have to actually consider spending less and having less government. So a surplus is a good thing, but it creates a dependency on having that same size budget the next time. And what I hear in the insanity of government is that if you don't spend the money, then you actually lose the money in terms of matching funds and things along those lines. So when I hear that, I go, there's something fundamentally wrong with the way that the system is set up right now. And so I'm looking to, just from the small platform of a county board of supervisor, to start to analyze and investigate what those issues might be to bring them on a bigger forum as well.
Okay. Gail, your question for Mr. Gibson.
How will you guarantee fire and medical coverage in the district, especially in Cayucas?
Well, by using my leadership skills to persuade all four of my colleagues to get behind the county picking up fire protection in Cayucas. So Cayucas Fire Protection District has served proudly for 70 years on a volunteer model that just doesn't work anymore. And so back on March 13th, they came before the board indicating that they would dissolve probably sometime this summer. That district will no longer provide service. And the county doesn't have to, but it is absolutely the right thing to do because our first role is to protect public safety. The county doesn't have to pick up fire service. But after a presentation of the facts and a lot of discussion with my colleagues, I was really proud that we got a unanimous vote to expand county fire service to include the community of Los Osos. That's going to be about $650,000 in the coming budget year and possibly as much as $900,000 a year, but it's the right thing to do.
Mr. Sparks.
Thank you. The fire services, my brother was a fireman, a volunteer fireman for a number of years, and he made the understanding clear that the private sector firemen got there way before the public sector firemen. So not to slight that it should be a government-related entity, it could be also a private sector entity that's funded in part by the citizens, as opposed to having a county-employee relationship. A private-public sector component might be a good way to actually have these things happen. Because here in Morro Bay, what happens is when somebody has a medical emergency, they call the fire department. And it's not a local ambulance issue at that point. There's overstaffing to that particular problem. And so I look at it and I go, well, this isn't how it's supposed to work. And I think it's because people are used to doing things the same way over and over again. And it just doesn't make sense if it doesn't make sense.
Mr. Eccles.
So this, in a way, relates to one of the prior questions about prudence in managing county funds. You know, where the rubber meets the road at the county is with the budget and where the dollars are spent. And every county supervisor knows that the primary purpose of county government is to provide public safety and protection. What we need to do is we need to be sure that those dollars are there to, in order to do that, in order to accomplish that. So it's just a matter of priority. Of course the five supervisors voted for that fire protection, because they knew it was the right thing to serve that community and keep them safe. More importantly is, where do they find the dollars? And we need to prudently and efficiently manage the budget to make sure that those type of funds are there when we need them to deploy.
Thank you. Hal, your question for Mr. Sparks.
The Los Osos Water Basin is of great importance to the residents of Los Osos and the farmers. How do you support its conservation efforts?
Well, the first part of it was the sewer that was built didn't actually think about the recharge issue carefully enough, so there was a sustainability problem that, when I was representing the litigation in that area, was already well known by that group, the sustainability group. So the fact that it's occurring now is a failure of government at the beginning stage of it. As far as like how to actually manage the water basin in Los Osos now, recharge is still an issue. And also the question would become, how is it that now that they're looking at perhaps getting on state water, what that cost is? And so, you know, It's one of the problems that I've had all along, and that's why I'm actually running, is because I knew that these were the kinds of future vision issues that were lacking at the time in the Los Osos situation. So the fact that they're having this problem now was not shocking to me.
Mr. Eccles.
Well, first, I would want to congratulate the residents of Los Osos and the surrounding area for their conservation efforts. As supervisor, I would do anything in my power, of course, to support those conservation efforts. At this point, the basin, without future growth or a dire drought, is at a level of sustainability. I think we need to work closely with the CSD and the other major water purveyor there to make sure that we maintain sustainability. But I don't think there's any problem at all with the residents in Los Osos in helping them to conserve. I think I would play a supportive role there, because they've already done an exemplary job of that. What I would do more is listen. I've sensed a real frustration in that area that folks aren't being listened to, that there are solutions out there that haven't properly been vetted or explored. So I would do, as a collaborator and a bridge builder, I would do everything in my power to build those bridges and help move that community forward in a positive spirit for those conservation efforts.
Mr. Gibson.
Thank you. On conservation, the county already has done a tremendous amount. Every connection, every house connecting to the wastewater project was offered rebates, and many took advantage of them to install water efficient fixtures. We have great conservation going on in Los Osos. Our average is down to under 50 gallons per capita per day of indoor water use. The county is also offering rebates now on converting septic tanks to possibly irrigate gardens and doing a whole bunch of other things. We will continue to work with the water purveyors. The three water purveyors in Los Osos are really the frontline people that should be working conservation, and it's going to have to become a way of life. Patrick is wrong on a number of the facts. About half of the wastewater is sent back to a leach field that does go back into the groundwater, and about the other half of the groundwater goes to water large grass areas at our schools that reduces pumping. The effect of that through our basin management plan was we are already starting to see the reversal of saltwater intrusion and the stabilization of the basin.
Angelica, your question will go first to Mr. Eccles.
Morro Bay has the largest harbor in the county. Do you work with or intend to work with fishing industry? Do you know the value or amount of economies that the fishing industry brings here?
So it's been, I'll have to admit, it's been a while since I've read the economic impact report from the fishing industry. But I will say this, I mentioned earlier that I'm a United States Coast Guard captain, licensed captain. I served in the Merchant Marine for 2 years out of college after I left Long Beach State on marine research vessels. And I also served for 4 years on the Harbor Advisory Board here in Morro Bay. Particularly during those 4 years, I got to know many of the people in the fishing industry here very closely. That is the real essence and history of this area, and it is a history that needs to be honored and taken care of. So as we evolve, as we grow as a community, we need to respect our history, and I would do all in my power as supervisor to ensure the health of the fishing industry here on the Central Coast so that moving forward, that intergenerational business could continue to thrive.
Mr. Gibson.
So as a county supervisor, I don't have direct authority over the fishing industry. The harbor is under the control of the city, and the offshore waters are the state and the feds. But here's a fresh idea. It involves the National Marine Sanctuary that's been proposed off these waters, the Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary, which is in process of being considered back in Washington, D.C. Commercial fishing interests here in Annapolis Beach were initially against it, and I told them, and I think that that's a mistake. Because I think they can do a bigger, high-value fishery if they can brand their catch as caught in a National Marine Sanctuary. It has an interesting connection to the offshore wind farms. As those come in, I think the fishing, I pitch this to the fishing interests as well. You might want to watch out where offshore wind is established here because that might come into conflict. So I think the time is ripe for the fishing industry to re-engage on the question of supporting the marine sanctuary, because through the spatial planning that goes on in that endeavor, I think we can have the best of both worlds. And I think we can have a thriving fishing industry here, catching high-value fish that'll be the envy of the Central Coast.
Mr. Sparks.
Well, I'm against that marine sanctuary idea from Mr. Gibson. As well as the Chumash rights to fish it. In Oregon and in Washington, where they have those rights, it's outrageous what they do and how they fish and what they take and dispose of as terms of waste. I've heard many, many stories about it, and I've seen and witnessed parts of what their operation looks like. It's certainly something that we would not tolerate if we were actually doing it ourselves. So to allow a sovereign nation like the Chumash to do that sort of fishing would devastate the fishing waters. That being said, again, you know, I agree that it's not a supervisor issue, but I certainly think that the supervisor from this coastal district is someone who would be concerned about it. Many of my friends used to fish in the industry here when they could more commercially fish. Some of my friends still have commercial boats here. So I'm definitely connected with the community. I realize that there's value in it in terms of monies that they acquire to sustain their families.
Thank you. Gail, your question for Mr. Gibson first.
Our aging population needs more and safe, effective care facilities. Do you have a plan?
We have a general plan. We have land zoned for multifamily housing, which would be the nature of a care facility. And that issue is near and dear to my heart, as my mother, 93 years old, although she would tell you that that's just a number, is in assisted living here in Morro Bay. And so I've seen firsthand the absolute wonder of what caring people can do. In terms of getting it built on the ground, we have to work with the private sector on that. And we had a proposal come forward in Cambria was a bit controversial because of its size and location, but I worked with the community members and actually got a decision from the board to approve 47 beds in what looked to me to be an ideal spot in Cambria. Unfortunately, that project ran afoul of the Coastal Commission and their concerns over the water supply in Cambria, and so for the time being, it has been put on the shelf. But I look forward to working with any interested party to provide such a facility on appropriately zoned land.
Mr. Sparks.
Well, that's finally something that Mr. Gibson and I could actually agree on. So, just like everyone else, we all have our various degrees of disagreement. However, I also have been targeting solutions for this particular subject. As I mentioned earlier, the air creep, I'm looking at how that could actually increase dramatically the number of homes that could be sited properly in communities where the persons that are getting older actually live and thrive. The idea is not so much to take away from their autonomy, but to allow them to continue to thrive. As we all age, that will be an issue that we're all facing. And so I'm definitely interested in it now, looking at places like the retired Cambria Air Force Base as a place to consider where some transitional housing might go as well. It's certainly something that I'm focused on as a realtor and as a broker. And my law practice is definitely looking at it as well as trying to figure out how to make it all work.
Mr. Eccles.
So the reason that we don't have more care facilities for our elderly here in the county is because when they come and take a look, they see a myriad of regulations and ordinance, red tape, bureaucracy that they have to deal with. So a solution that I've come up with this, or for this, relates to both workforce housing and housing for seniors, which would include care facilities, and that's opportunity zones. The government can't just say, well, I'll talk to people and we'll encourage you to come here. We need to set our ordinance up so that it doesn't discourage people from building a care facility. It actually incentivizes them. So when we look at different areas throughout the state, there are some areas that have a higher per capita care facility, beds per capita, certainly than we do. And there's a reason for that, because the builders are able to go in there and build that and provide that service. So as a county, we need to look at creating opportunity zones. That would be the first thing that I would look at for them.
Thank you. We're going to have time for about three more questions. So I am going to have Hal direct your next question to Mr. Sparks.
Will you support the selling of cannabis?
It's law. Yes, I support it. Although, after investigating the subject matter, it seems to be problematic, particularly in states that already have it, like Colorado, where the increase in homelessness was a direct response to people who became recreational users. I think there's a high benefit for instance, the veterans who have PTSD issues as well as opioid addictions to be able to use cannabis medically. So I'm a little concerned oftentimes with the idea of recreational use and on par with alcohol use. From the legal perspective, the idea that people will drink and or use and drive is a while they may be sane or sober, so to speak, they may think so, it probably will increase the number of accidents as well. So, yes, recreationally, no to some of the other nuances of the subject.
Mr. Eccles.
So I think you've probably gotten a feel for me to this point that on fiscal issues, I'm a fiscal conservative. As a small business owner, I look at limited government. I look at efficient and responsive government. On social issues, I tend to be more liberal. I can tell you this, I'm the only nonpartisan running for a supervisor seat in the county, not a member of either major party. I'm a declined estate voter. So people are forced to ask me, well, what does that mean, Jeff? What are you? And sometimes it's hard to describe, but there is a nifty little phrase, socially liberal, fiscally conservative. I think as a county we should, because particularly now that it's state law, we should embrace the cannabis industry. We should meld it into the existing infrastructure as much as possible. It doesn't have to be at odds with the other ag industries here. So it's state law. It was certainly voted on by a majority of folks here in the county as well, favored it. So I would, if elected, do my part to move the county forward in helping that industry flourish.
Mr. Gibson.
Well, legalized cannabis is reality right now, and we're going to have to work as a county to adapt to all the impacts that that's going to require. I actually have a long history of working with legalized cannabis. Back in 2006, I was on the Planning Commission when we put in the land use regulations for medical dispensaries. As we move forward in the new fully legalized world, I'll have to observe that our board majority made a bit of a mash of our land use regulations overall in terms of how we deal with the various aspects of cultivation, testing, through sale. We're going to have to work to rationalize that so that we can get businesses legalized and have the resources to work against, work to suppress the black market that's going to continue here. So it presents a wide range of challenges, but I support its legalization. I think in the end it's going to be better for our society as a whole, and we're going to be working on it for a number of years yet.
All right, gentlemen, I've just been given the word that due to our taping that we need to move on to our closing comments. So I have written your names on each of your names on my business card, and I'm going to ask my colleague to draw a card who will see who will go first, and then we'll do that again for the second speaker and the third. So. Mr. Eccles, you will go first. 3 minutes.
Thank you again to the Women's League of Voters, as well as the outreach, the Latino Outreach Council, and the various chambers for hosting us tonight. It has been a pleasure to be with my two colleagues and with you tonight. I've enjoyed it very much. And please, everyone, of course, vote. You've seen a few similarities, but I think you've seen a lot of differences. As I mentioned earlier, I am the only nonpartisan running for a supervisor seat in the county. I think that is vitally important at this juncture. Let's be frank. There, it's been mentioned tonight, the board majority, we heard that several times from the sitting supervisor. There's a divide on the board. It's 3-2. The three-member majority and the two-member minority. The only solution that I've heard for that has been, well, let's flip that majority to a 3-2 majority. Folks, that is not a solution. That is not a path forward for healing. That is the swinging of the political pendulum. That is fever and chill politics. That's politics of division. That does not serve us well. That is not going to give us the best policy. It's not the best governance. We can do better. I am here to offer you new leadership and fresh ideas and a path forward of healing as a true independent. So I respectfully ask that you consider voting for me come June 5th or with your mail-in ballot. If you'd like to find out more about me, you can go to the website. The website is jeffeccles.org. As a father of two 14-year-olds that will be attending Morro Bay High School a little bit later this year, we've got to do better. We need to maintain the rich culture of the Central Coast and our quality of life. I pledge that to each and every one of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Mr. Gibson.
Thank you. And my thanks again to the Latino Outreach Council and the League, and for you all to come out and participate in this fundamentally important civic institution. I'm proud to be before you tonight to ask for your vote. I'm running on my record, a record of substantial accomplishments over the last 11 and a half years, and we've talked about a lot of those. It's my knowledge of county government, my experience in getting things done within the frame of county government, my ability to form relationships with our communities and with other agencies at the state and federal level that has led to the various successes that we've already talked about. I guess the question for you is, what kind of supervisor do you want? Are you looking for a supervisor whose main goal is about healing sometimes fractious Board of Supervisors? Or are you looking for a supervisor who's going to stand up for your interests? And I have been proud to stand up for the values of the Second District for these 11 and a half years, to work for conservation solutions that have, over longer time than that, protected over 20 miles of our coast, to protect the character of our communities, to work on those kinds of initiatives that solve the pressing problems before you. And I would submit that my track record provides me exactly the tools that are going to be needed to take on the vexing problems that we've talked about this evening. I'm proud to be before you tonight with a long list of endorsements. They start with Congressman Salud Carbajal and includes State Senator Bill Monning. I'm endorsed by all five members of the Morro Bay City Council and all five members of the San Luis Obispo City Council, by majorities of the major community services districts in this county, by a variety of other school district and special district elected officials, and by quite a number of individual citizens with whom I've been proud to interact. Those endorsements mean a lot to me, and they should indicate to you my ability to work with all sorts of individuals within this county for the overall public good. That's been my passion. That is my commitment to you. I am again asking for your vote on or before the June 5th election, and I thank you again for being here this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson. Mr. Sparks.
It's been fantastic.
It's been fantastic to be here tonight. Thank you all for coming out again. And thank you to the League of Women Voters for coordinating all those questions. There are a volume of them. Thank you, panel, for doing such a fine job of asking them in a straightforward way and moderating. Thank you. The subject of why I'm running, I think it became clear during this question and answer that I'm the Republican in the group. You know, I have a fiscal relationship to cost-benefit analysis, which I think it could take into effect this $590 million budget, which has grown phenomenally during the period of time where Mr. Gibson's been the incumbent. And so in that relationship to its growth of more and more government, I'm not really in favor of the idea of an ever-expanding government. I don't think government is a solution point. There are certain things that government's responsible for, and I think it's trodden into areas where it shouldn't be responsible. So you've heard me talk about some private sector solutions in relationship to what should be the private sector solutions, not the public sector solutions. While I appreciate the questions in the areas that they've come in terms of affordable housing, I think the county has some role in relationship to what it could do in terms of using some of its existing land to assist, because the price of dirt is so high here that it makes it unaffordable for people to be able to build, except for in high density, which then rises into traffic issues. So those are things that are concerns and pressures that I think really people talk about fresh approaches. The idea, though, is the ability to think outside the box. So I'm definitely thinking that this is the opportunity for my time to come to present a myriad of different things that I've developed educationally, as well as practically by listening to the people. As opposed to just listening to the people that are in government, I'm actually listening to the people.
Thank you very much. I think we should, and I think I speak on behalf of everyone here, thank you for your willingness to serve, and we applaud you for that. Thank you again to Gail, Helen, and Helika for volunteering. Thank you, everybody, for coming out and becoming an informed voter. This concludes our evening. Thank you. Thank you.